Okay, Chodesh Tov. Chodesh Tov, Sof. Finally, we have a Sunday in Yeshiva week. This is very exciting, which means I can actually do tefillah. We literally have not had a Sunday, a normal Sunday, since the beginning of the year. But for first parsha. So today I figured someone else we should meet. We've met her before, but it's worth knowing about. We also have it in the shelf. So if ever you're looking up something on Parsha, this is a good safer to have. We have it somewhere, or it's upstairs. I don't remember. So this is Nechama Leibovich, right? She is amazing. Who is Nechama Leibovich? Since we're... she probably would have said Leibovich. Definitely would have said Leibovich, because, you know, but Leibovich if you would like, but, you know, in Israel, definitely people will say it the way she would have said it, which is Leibovich. Right? Who is she? She was married. She was indeed married. She married her uncle. But she was indeed married. No, it is not. It is actually permitted. So she was a Bible scholar. She was born in 1905, died in 1997. If you want her full biography, you can read Yael Unterberg's biography of her, which is incredible. It's like 700 pages long. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed it. Of course, my favorite part of it was, which I have used in Shirim before, is what surprised me most was that she had deep, deep respect for Rav Kook, and therefore Rav Kook had this anomalous position that no one really accepts anymore, that women aren't allowed to vote. And she didn't vote until the day she died out of respect for Rav Kook, which surprised me on so many levels, like about Rav Kook, about Nechama Leibovich. But she was a Bible scholar. She was born in Riga. Her older brother was one of the most controversial Jewish philosophers in the world, Yeshayahu Leibovich, who was... maybe for another time. He was a fascinating, fascinating individual. She got her PhD from the University of Marburg. She moved to Israel in 1930. And she taught in, basically she taught in religious Zionist teaching seminaries. Later on in life, she taught in Tel Aviv University. She gave classes at Hebrew University. Sometimes on the radio. She taught at Grus Kollel, the YU Kollel, for a bit. This all started, really, that she started a weekly, both a Parsha group in her house, and also she used to do correspondence. She had questions on the Parsha that she would send out to anyone who wanted them in the world, and she would mark them. So she would send out, like, thousands a week around the world and mark people's, Parsha sheets, if they sent to her, Ad Hayom, if you try, they're all online. I can usually get some of the questions. It is almost impossible for me to answer all the questions correctly. There were like Rosh Yeshiva who used to try to answer it, and very rarely did they get all the answers right. She basically put together her approaches, or at least some of them, in this is the translated version, on the studies on the Chumash. And in general, her derech was to very carefully understand the Parshanim. Right? It was to take very critical questions and try to understand the Parshanim, especially Rashi. She loved Rashi. She wrote a separate book just on the methodology of Rashi. So that's Nechama Leibovich. She's great. And you get part of her personality from the books, and you get it, I think, even more, not that I knew her, obviously, but more from the questions, if you ever want to really challenge yourself and see if you can figure out how to answer her questions correctly. But yeah, her biography is really fascinating. I really enjoyed it. I don't love all biographies, but this was, she was really... She was really fascinating. Okay, so I figured we would take a piece then from her. Netoch Kedei, her works, you'll also meet the other Mefarshim, because she is very much into Parshanut, as I said. But here's a very simple one, okay? The first chapter of Parshat Noach, usually she has about seven pieces per Parsha, is about, what it means that Noach was an Ish Tzaddik. And she already tells you that there is a machloket in Chazal. What is the fundamental machloket in Chazal about Noach's personality? Noach ich tzadik tamim haya bedorotav. What is the machloket Rashi? Good. So bedorotav. And what do they pick up on? Correct. Yesh darshan adol shvach, v'yesh darshan leganai. Some say he was only good in his generation, and some say even his generation he was good, and he's contrasted with Avram, who is hitalech lefanai v'yeh tamim. Right, and the mashal, as it appears in the Tanchuma, is either... he was a silver coin amongst copper coins, where silver isn't so valuable, you know, compared to gold. But if you have a pile of bronze coins, so okay, silver coin, wonderful. And Leganai is, he was a jar of balsam oil in a grave. So sure, it smelled good in the grave, but I don't know if that says very much, right? That's the how it appears in the Tanchuma. However... some of the Mefarshim take this not as good versus bad, but they say, no. Everyone agrees it's bad. The only question is how bad. So if you look, for example, at the Levush Hara'ah of Rav Mordechai Yaffe in his comment to Rashi, he basically interprets and said, no. It's not Menachatze Alakatze. It's not some saying he was amazing and some saying he was terrible. It was, everyone agreed he was mediocre. Right? Meaning the only reason they could have a machloket was because he was mediocre. The only question was, is mediocrity among terrible people, does that prove that you would have been great if you only had the chance? Which is pretty good, but still recognizes that he was only mediocre. Right? Or is mediocrity always just mediocrity? Right? That was basically how the Levush takes his interpretation of Rashi. Now, part of, as Nechama points out, this is how she insisted on being called, was Nechama, apparently. I always have a problem calling her, but that's how she insisted on being called. She notes that it's not just the Pasuk. It's not just that they're arguing about the interpretation of the Pasuk. Right? This is a contextual machloket. Meaning, they're looking at the whole story of Noach and then reading it back into that Pasuk. There's reasons that they believe that Noach might be, at best, mediocre. So, for example, the Zohar picks up on the contrast between Avram's reaction when Hashem told him that that stone was going to be destroyed, and Noach's reaction when he was told that the entire world was going to be destroyed, right? The Zohar says, well, look, Avram, it's a single city, he was clearly compassionate, and what does he say? Right? He challenges God, I have to spet tzadikim rasha. Hashem tells Noach, I'm going to destroy the world, and what does he say? So how exactly do I build this teva thing, right? What do I use? Wood and, you know, and tar. How do I go about doing this, right? So what she points out is that if you read the broader interpretation of Mefarshim, and this is a critical point to understand in general about Rashi in his invoking of Midrashim in general, even if the local point that they seem to be making is not Mukhrach, right? They're not usually making a localized point. Right? When they make a point about Noach's character, yes, the hook is Ish tzadik tamim haya bedorotav. But they're making, the machloket is much more deep-seated. The people who read it Leganai are saying, look at his life and contrast it to the really great people, like Avram. You know, there's something lacking. And the people who are saying Leshvach are making a contextual argument. That, you know, he managed to be good in the time of the Mabul. That's no small feat. Another hint that the Mefarshim are picking up on is the difference in terms of how Noach and Avram are described to have walked with God. Noach is Et Elohim Hitalech Noach. He's walking with God, which is great, but how's Avram described? Hitalech Lefanai, right? God actually tells him to go ahead, right? Avram clearly shows a certain level of initiative in terms of his Derech Hashem, which is not found with Noach. Who picks up on this particular diuk, and it's part of their read? Also Chazal. This is in Breishit Rabbah. Rav Yehuda notes this, right? That Rav Yehuda Omer, Mashal LeMelech, She'elu Shnei Banim, Echad Gadol Ve'Echad Katan. Amar LeKatan, Halechimi. Amar LeGadol, Bo V'Alech Lefanai. Right? Rav Yehuda says the difference between a little kid and a big kid. Right? The little kid, you say, hold my hand. Right? And the big kid, you say, go ahead, I'll meet you at home. Right? The big kid, you trust. You have faith in them. The little kid, not so much, right? You love them. It's great if they hold your hand and don't try to run away, right? That's not a terrible thing, but it's not. But it's not ideal. That's Rabbi Yehuda's mashal. Rabbi Nehemiah has a different version of it. A king who's trying to get through an alleyway. Where the one who's walking ahead actually, right, helps, so to speak, lead him for, right, and he says, right, no, Avram had the ability to actually guide other people in, right, back into Urkazdim, and that's why Hashem says, you know, walk ahead to Israel. If you are so good at, when no one knows God, at showing the light, then, right, go ahead, right, I trust you. And then she also notes that Buber notes this as well, that Noach stays put in nature, a man of the soil is rescued from the deluge. Avram is the first to make his way into history as a proclaimer of God's dominion. Okay? But in general, I think what is unique about Nechamah is that, first of all, she has an incredible mastery of the Parshanim, but more importantly is that she recognizes that to fully understand the Parshanim, you have to, A, realize what they're actually asking and responding to, and bring them into conversation with the other Mefarshim that are answering the same question, even if they're not explicitly doing that. So what she, right, her central organizational insight, I think, in this perek is to note that if you look at their comment of Tzadik Hayah B'Taradav as a localized one, and all the other machlokot about Noach as separate, then you're missing the point. Right, the point is that all these Makarot, in the Midrashim, in the Zohar, in Rashi, what they're all asking is, taking Noach's totality of personality, how do we look at him? There's one voice that says, look, he never teaches anybody about God. He doesn't bother defending humanity. He lets them just die. That's not something which is so great. That whole school that views that as the defining characteristic of Noach hangs that on, Tzadik Hayah B'Torotav, only B'Torotav. And then there's the other voice, which is to say, look, yeah, he was mediocre, but you know what? Even managing to get mediocrity when you look at how bad things were is an accomplishment. And when they say Tzadik Hayah B'Torotav, and he would have been even better in other generations, again, that's not a localized read, that's a contextual read, or maybe even a psychological read of how difficult it is to even maintain basic decency in a terrible world. Right? But to get to understand that comment of Rashi, quoting the Midrash, is not a localized comment. Right? The fundamental dispute about how do you read the whole story, and that to fully understand, you need to understand context. Right? That's the type of thing that, in general, you'll see if you read through. I don't know who's calling me, so I'll end now. Nechama's comments. But in general, if you want anything in the Parsha, she's always great.